Hey, what's up? It's Marcus Williams, and hey, Hoxley Workman is coming to Canmore, playing a show at the Community Cafe on October the 25th. And I got a chance to speak with him about his new album and other aspects of his musical career. So Hoxley, why don't we start with that album? What was the writing process like with this album compared to previous records?
Oh, you know, I think with Old Cheetah, there was so much improvising in the studio. I probably went into the studio with, I would say, four, you know, written songs, which is to say I sat at the piano with a pad of paper and I wrote those songs. The balance of the record is a lot of me and Steve Bays in a studio jamming and sort of entertaining ourselves and then kind of making songs from the results of what would end up being, you know, 30, 45 minutes worth of just jamming. And it's kind of the way Mounties has worked, and it's really, it's a beautiful way to feel creative, and it's a bit addictive, and I must admit that I'm feeling like my next record has to be a flat-out, like, piano, proper songwriting record, because it is so wonderful to just be recording and improvising that I don't want to lose sight of sort of the craft side of what I do.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, improvising some of the lyrics, that must have been really difficult. What made you kind of decide to go that route?
Yeah, I did improvise lyrics on a handful of tunes. Like, off the top of my head, I think, you know, definitely two, maybe three were, like, pure vocal improvs.
Yeah.
Teenage Cats, for instance, was, you know, the song got built, there was a template for it, and then the whole lyric was sung as an improvisation, and so what you hear on the record happened kind of in, yeah, it didn't exist before. It certainly, there was no lyrics. I kind of improvised the whole thing. And you know, I think, too, I've been a devotee of Jay-Z for years, and I've always sort of seen the purity in the way he is able to kind of, without writing anything down, be able to access something really, really elemental. And I find that, as rappers go, like, he's still somebody whose use of words I find so thoroughly beguiling. And so I think I've always harbored a little bit of a wish to play the music game a little bit like that, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah. Now, this with the whole album, Old Cheetah, like, that title totally, it just fits with the album. Can you describe how that how the title kind of came into form, or did you have, like, the name before going into the studio, or?
Yeah, definitely. Boy, I really dig that you're vibing on that. Yeah. We knew we were recording Old Cheetah from almost day one. In fact, like, we didn't talk about recording sessions. We talked about Old Cheetah sessions, and it was like, it became, you know, in a miniature way, sort of iconic to the process. And so, which is nice, because in a way, there's a lot of, at least for me, why I'm attracted to certain words or combinations of words is if they inspire, like, a big sort of colorful atmosphere in your mind, and Old Cheetah seemed to feel like that. I think to Steve and I both in the studio, it gave us a sense of direction.
Right. Now, personally, kind of, I don't know if maybe they're just both cats, but the title Old Cheetah kind of reminded me of Def Leppard. You know, it kind of doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it fits together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of the first things that kind of clicked in my mind when I heard you were dropping that album.
Well, I love non sequiturs. I love words, and I love words that sit sort of, that are supposed to sit uncomfortably next to each other. But like you say, Old Cheetah has a nice resonance. And so, you know, when we grow, like, as kids, at least for me, like, you know, when you're learning about the world and learning about the animals in the world, like, there's a few iconic animals I think most kids sort of gravitate towards. At least for me, that was the case with, whether it was kangaroos or, you know, any kind of iconic strange animal. And definitely when you're a kid, when the teacher's teaching about cheetahs and how they own the desert landscape and they're fast runners and they've got, you know, bird bones and they got oversized organs and there are these little miracles. And I think in a way, it was nice to think of the wise, gentle cheetah under a tree, you know, sort of laughing at the libidinous desperation of the young cheetah chasing down an impala, you know? So Yeah, it's a nice. I still quite feel the title in my guts.
Yeah, like Old Cheetah doesn't sound right together, but at the same time, how else would you describe it? Like, I'm actually kind of surprised the two words haven't been used together before.
Yeah, totally, right?
Right, now, one of the songs on the record, We're Not Broken Yet, it's actually my girlfriend Isabel's favorite song on the record. I was just wondering, what's the thought process behind that song? Is that one of the improvised songs off the record?
No, that was one of the ones that was sat and written, and I mean, that's my, like, here, you know, admittedly, we're in this strange election, and there's extreme negativity, and it sort of feels like kindness and thoughtfulness and intelligence and warmth and wisdom are all suddenly being demonized in favor of jumping to, you know, knee-jerk hatred and stuff. And I mean, I guess too, there's some pokes in We're Not Broken. There's a couple of pokes at mainstream news and just how pathetic it all feels, you know. But I think, if anything, it's a meditation for me who sort of lives with a certain amount of darkness that's constant and ongoing in me. And it's a meditation for me that at our core, I still think we're pure and we're good. And that despite the powers that be that are trying to dumb down an entire culture and bring out the most dreadful parts of us as humans and put that on display and have that be the feature of division in a society, in a culture, in a country, I just had to remind myself that that's all still a lie, you know, like the goodness in us is still there. Our potential, I think, I'm not a person who tends to be hopeful, and I guess I have to even write songs to remind myself that there is hope.
Right, and how you just explain that song there, it just makes sense how that song is so deep and so incredible.
Oh man, that's so cool. It's still my favorite song on the record, and I'm grateful that people do like resonate with it, because I feel like there's a lot of honest guts in that one.
Right now that we're kind of on the topic here, you've been an artist for a while now, 15 albums. Have you felt your subject matter and your songs sort of shift?
Oh, you know, I still feel like I sing and write about all the same stuff. Like, I think, you know, my first record, For Him and the Girls, was code for God and women. And I think in those early, early, early days, in my naivete, I figured, that's my audience, you know? Like, God and women, that's who you're writing for. And, you know, obviously things have felt like they've expanded, and I don't sort of go into the studio or into a writing session thinking, today I'm going to write a song about, you know, this.
Right.
It's kind of what comes out. But I ultimately am still, I'm still inspired by the same things. The beauty of human connection, the ugliness of human connection, the beauty of human wisdom, and the ugliness of human ignorance, and how humans, despite, you know, pretend evolution, are strangely emotionally complex and then not complex. I think it's just, there's a real conundrum when it comes to humans, and I tend towards misanthropy, but like, but with that said, there's tons of human stuff that I find incredible and extraordinary. So I think that tends to be how all the music I write come out. It's a fascination, and a loathing and an exalted sort of sense of some of the more banal goings on in human, you know, in a human's daily life, at least the humans I know.
Yeah, right. Interesting. But I think we've gotten off track a little bit.
Right.
Down to your music. How do you choose a set list? Like, I mean, you only have, like, what, an hour and a bit to play, and you have so many songs to choose from. How do you even choose a set list?
Well, I put it out on Twitter and Facebook this time around, and I said, you know, that the band and I are interested in playing different music, which is to say that, you know, that certain standards that I've been playing for years might take a back seat, and if so, what would you like to hear that's maybe not, you know, Jealous of Your Cigarette or Safe and Sound, or, you know, these sort of ones that I play all the time, and had a really overwhelming response, and a lot of people had interesting thoughts on songs that are maybe a little bit lesser played or lesser known, and so that's how it sort of started. And I think I took a photo of, because I printed the list of songs out from all the records, and I think it was 160 songs or something like that, and then we whittled it down to 37, and from 37, the band and I, just from, you know, from having to learn some of these songs that we'd never played before, I think we some of them were clear. It was like, wow, like this just, for some reason, just doesn't feel good live. So when all was said and done, I think we came in at just around 30 or 30 plus songs. And it was just a lot of help from folks who've been buying the records over the years. And I don't think a lot about my back catalog, because I tend to be somebody, unfortunately, who's always thinking about, well, what am I going to do next, you know? And so I had even forgotten about a lot of the music that folks were suggesting. So it was neat for me to kind of go back and re-engage with even some songs off of Lover Fighter, which back in the day we would have been playing every night in Europe and elsewhere, and then they just leave your memory completely.
Cool. I've just got one last question for you. My girlfriend Isabel is a huge fan. Like, I remember she told me this story like way back when she was like 11. You were playing at the Knoxville Church in Calgary or something.
Yep.
And it was like she was at the very back pew and she was just yelling like songs to play, but her little voice just couldn't carry to the front. But she wants to know about Mr. Lonely, actually.
Yeah.
But she's intrigued. What can you tell us about Mr. Lonely?
Mr. Lonely has been my faithful touring brother and piano player for somewhere between 16 and 17 years. He's a consummate piano player. He comes from a background of playing theater, and so he and I were a real natural fit. He is really able to kind of, like a theater player, to watch me on stage, because there'll be times if I'm feeling like changing the song or stopping the song to chit-chat or whatever. Like, he is very, very adaptable, very, very tuned in musician. And the other thing about him is he's an extraordinary intellect, and he's got an uncanny sense of direction, which I was just saying this on the weekend, because we were just in Newfoundland, and I said, I was remarking how in my adult life there are certain things that Lonely he's usurped my development in, and you know, getting myself places is one of those things, because he's just so uncannily connected to where we're going. He doesn't need a map. He doesn't need a compass. And I feel like as an adult, I was just a muscle I never developed, because I never had to get myself anywhere over all these years. Lonely always got me somewhere. And he's just one of those guys. He's very, very even-tempered, whereas I'm a maniac, and he is... on the side, he's a computer programmer. He owns a company that develops software. And so that's the other crazy thing about Todd, whereas I find touring all-consuming. Old Lonely there, he's always able to stay productive. I mean, there are definitely nights where I have nightmares of him saying, you know what, I'm quitting the music business.
Well, I'm sure he will continue to play keys for you. Hoxley Workman is coming to Canmore on October the 25th, that's a Sunday. They're playing at the Community Cafe at 8 o'clock. Doors at 7. Should definitely also check out his new album, Old Cheetah. Hoxley, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for the chat.